Hey friends, welcome to Living the KG Life, a pixie dust filled podcast. On today's episode, we have Greg from the Rise and Run podcast joining us to talk all about Disney's Aulani Resort, running, the Rise and Run podcast, and all the things. So stick around, it's going to be great. Greg, welcome to the podcast. I am so excited to have you. Thanks for joining.
KG, it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for, having me back. The first time it was with the rest of the gang, but this is my first solo venture, my solo career.
Greg's solo debut.
But see, the thing is, though, is that even though I'm part of a group, if we're going to make a boy band reference here, I'm probably more of like the JC than I am the Justin, you know, that's for Bob, you know.
I love it. But you know, there's a lot of takes out there that JC is actually the star of NSYNC. So
that's very true. It's very, very true.
Watch out, Bob. I love it. Well, today we have so many good things to talk about. Kick us off. Tell us who you are and what you do.
My name is Greg. I live in suburban Philadelphia. I have been a Disney nut since the ripe old age of 7 years old because, you know, in this neck of the woods, you know, your summer vacation every year is, as the people around here like to say, you go down the shore. And my parents hated the beach. So we went to Disney every year. So I literally went every year from 93 through 2001. And then went intersperringly, you know, between then and college. And now that I have a family of my own, I'm back there extremely often. So, so that's just the regular Disney journey of this. And then I discovered Run Disney back in 2016. And that has just been a massively major part of my life ever since then. And then the latest venture, you know, back in 2021 when the tried and true Bob decided, you know, he's like, let's do a podcast. And he wanted to know if I want to be a part of it. And I just thought it was because he knew I was an editor as my real job. But I thought he just wanted to use my services. But I mean, great. It was to use my services and to be a voice on it. And so it's been an absolute pleasure to be a co-host of the Rise and Run podcast for, you know, a little more than 2 years now. And it's been an awesome, awesome journey.
Yeah. We're just saying that you're at over
131 episodes as of day of recording here. So.
Which is so exciting. That is huge. Huge, huge, huge. I hope you're all very, very proud of yourselves. And there's no stopping.
It's been an extremely wild ride, but a gratifying ride. You know, when I was in high school, I was a part of like all these student leadership organizations, and I would see motivational speakers all the time. And I thought to myself, you know, I would love to do that for a living. But the problem is I didn't have a traumatic story like all of these people did.
Sure.
And the fact now that by doing the podcast, the number of people, whether it's through Facebook or Instagram or in person at the races or even non-Run Disney races, the people that will come up and say, you know, thank you for, you know, having the podcast because it instilled, you know, the power in me to be able to run my first 5K or run my first Dopey or my first ultra or something like that. Yeah. So the fact that that's how I got my motivational speaker, you know, sense fulfilled in me has just been extremely gratifying, satisfying. And the fact that as long as I can positively impact one person in my life, I know I can die a happy man. So.
And you're winning. I love it. So we're going to talk today about Aulani.
Aloha.
Yes. And we'll talk about the Rise and Run podcast, and then we'll wrap up with our speed round of favorites.
All right.
But let's talk about young Greg. Like you said, that ripe old age of 7. Talk to us about your earliest memories of Disney. What made you fall in love with Disney?
So, I mean, like I said before, it was my parents didn't want to go to the beach. So it was, going down to Orlando every single year. But I think the other thing that like really got me entrenched in it is my father is a retired elementary school art teacher.
Love it.
So art was such a massive part of my life growing up, and art and Disney just tie into one another, you know, so well. Yeah. And one of my favorite attractions, back from the early and mid 90s, was the animation tour that you used to do at MGM.
Yes.
With Robin Williams, yes, and Walter Cronkite. And I remember the first time I walked out of there, I said to my parents that I knew what I wanted to be when I grew up. I wanted to be a Walt Disney animator. Mm-hmm. And then I made the comment to them and said, well, and you know, here's the crazy thing too. I'm never going to have to make my bed again. And they looked at me and they're like, why? I'm like, I'll just live here at Disney World. And, you know, the mouse keeping will come in and make my bed for me every day. And so they always had such a good laugh out of that. But that's the big part, was just having the art and then the idea to grow the imagination. And then along with that came, you know, exploring the parks and the resorts and the restaurants. And, you know, and I always laugh. Before my mom passed away, she would type out her own 25-page Disney World guides. You know, before like the brow bombs was a thing, yeah, and everything like that. And, you know, so we were like the family in town that was like, if you have a question about Disney World, you know, you go see us. And then my mom would print them out with all of this like terrible, like 1990s Microsoft Word, Disney clip art and stuff like that. And she would give it to people. And then that information got, you know, passed down generation to generation. And then like once the internet became a thing, then like I turned into like the Diz boards guy. And then like my mom and I would have conversations about, yeah, that. And now with social media and everything else, it's just, you know, the knowledge has grown exponentially. And it's, you know, there's not a day in my life that I'm not thinking about Disney, Disney World, Run Disney, or, yeah, or anything.
Now,
like,
do
that.
You still have any of those printouts from your mom?
You know, my father has been cleaning out the house for a while, but I'll have to ask him about that. But I wouldn't be shocked in the least bit if he has something, because I mean, I remember years ago he gave me a little box of my stuff from when I was an exchange student in Japan, when I was in high school. And it was a copy of every single email that I sent home.
Wow.
You know, over the course of the 6 weeks. So if they still have that, I wouldn't, yeah, be shocked if they still have one of those.
That guides, would be so epic to pull that up and like see what it actually looks like in comparison to what you,
exactly,
do today. I love it. Now, I have to say, I think you are the only other person that I know that loved the animation tour, because that was literally my life when we would go to the parks. And it'd be the same thing. Every time we go, my parents would be like, we have done this 4,000 times. And like, doesn't matter, we're going to go. It was the best. And the gift shop, like the souvenir shop at the end, mm-hmm, you remember that? Was,
yep, mm-hmm,
hands down, yep, the best one on property. It crushes me that it's not there.
I want to throw no shade to Star Wars, but what they are using that building for now is just a travesty.
Blasphemy.
I mean, yes, at this point, I'd rather them bulldoze it and put something brand new and keep the memory of what that was on that hallowed ground, as opposed to this, you know, hodgepodge of Star Wars stuff. And just, but
yes, Star Wars and like Disney Junior and the, yep, Little Mermaid. It makes no
sense.
Oh, RIP, my favorite. We talked a little bit about what you used to do back in the day. What do your trips look like when you go to Disney now? I'm sure at this point, with all the trips that you do, you've got to have some traditions, things that are must-dos. What do you have to do when you go?
I mean, mostly everything revolves around Run Disney now, to be honest. But occasionally, you know, there'll be those times where there's a trip that's not run-focused. Must-dos, to be honest, a lot of it revolves around food.
Yep.
The one that, like, sticks out in my head is, like, no trip to Disney World today is complete. I really hope I'm not giving away a big secret on the podcast here.
Ooh.
The best hidden gem in terms of a quick service meal is the pulled pork nachos over at Captain Cook's at the Polynesian. It is just the most delicious thing in the world, and very apt, you know, in terms of our conversation today about Lonnie.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it is such a wonderful mishmash of wine flavors and you know, the fact that, you know, you got the pineapple and the Kahlua pork and the spicy mayo and everything like that. And the fact that it's like $10 or $11, it's like better than anything you could get across Seven Seas Lagoon at Magic Kingdom. So yeah, no trip is complete without a stop over at the Poly and getting the pulled pork nachos.
Love that. And when it comes to Run Disney weekends, is that still the same, or is there anything else specific when you're at a Run Disney weekend?
I mean,
aside from, of course, a Rise and Run meetup.
Oh, of course. Yeah. No, I think for me, but we're required to do this, though, is one of my favorite parts of the weekend now is the expo. Mm. There's nothing better than being able to be surrounded by your extended family at an hour that is not 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone's bright eyed and bushy tailed and, you know, drinking their ciders. And again, just being able to catch up with old friends, whether it's people within our podcast family or going to say hi to Jeff Galloway or BB Brooke or our friend Pam over at Fluffy Fizzies. You know, back in 2016 or 2019 when I was doing races, it was you go to the expo, you get your stuff, you get out, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Now you're there for 4 to 5 hours, and it's just, I leave there with such a big smile on my face because, you know, it's this awesome family reunion, and yeah, it's not a race weekend without it.
Yeah, I was just saying that on the Princess recap episode that hasn't gone up yet, but is coming soon. And it's so wild how different I feel like my race weekends have gotten, to your point, from like getting in, getting out, or even doing the race and heading back and then going to the parks. Now there's so much more about the community and all the friends and actually experiencing like the magic of Run Disney and not just the magic of Disney altogether, which is super cool.
Absolutely.
Love it. So let's talk Aulani. You just went on a trip.
Yes.
Let's start with, where did the trip idea come from? Had you been planning it for a while? Were you going to celebrate and get away? What was the goal of the trip? Because I want to know everything.
Okay. So this started all the way back in January of 22. And then actually, believe it or not, starts in Hawaii itself.
Oh.
So I come off of marathon weekend. I had just run my first ever marathon as part of the Goofy Challenge. Mm-hmm. And a week later, I had it's a rough business trip, but I was told that I needed to go to Maui for work.
Ouch.
Yeah. Really, really tough. I was at this high-end Marriott resort in the Grand Wailea section of Maui. And
how dare they?
I know. God, it was rough. It was so rough. But for years, my wife and I have been researching Disney Vacation Club. Mm-hmm. And we knew we wanted to pull the trigger on it because to us, it just made too much financial sense. I have watched too many videos from the Diz Unplugged or DVC fan. I've been on the message boards. You know, I have like the Google spreadsheets to figure out like what it cost. And like at the time, you know, essentially it panned out to be, okay, for what I would pay to stay at Pop Century, I could stay at a DVC resort. And to me, for the rest of my life and, you know, and the extension of my family and stuff like that, it just made too much sense. But the thing was, I knew we wouldn't be able to afford it until my daughter was out of daycare, because that's like a mortgage payment in itself. So I'm sitting at the pool because, again, really, really tough business trip here. I'm sipping Mai Tais. I'm staring out into the ocean. The humpback whales are jumping out of the water and slapping their tails on the ocean. While I'm doing this, my wife is texting me DVC resale contract listings.
Dangerous game.
And at that point, I'm just like, I'm so overcome with like the emotion of this business trip and where I am and everything like that. I'm like, you know what? Send them an inquiry email. Let's just kick the tires on it. And I'm not kidding you, about less than 48 hours later, I was actually still in Hawaii when we officially signed the paperwork on our offer being accepted.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
So it was from there, once I flew home and we passed this thing called first right of refusal, because Disney can buy back the contract if they want to and everything like that.
Yep.
You know, my wife is now planning out a spreadsheet in terms of what we wanted to do, and everything lined up to the fact that in a couple of years, we could do this number of trips with our points and bank and borrow and all that jazz. And we had made a promise to each other on our honeymoon in Antigua that we said for our 10-year anniversary, we were going to come back to the same resort that we went to on our honeymoon. And I'm like, screw that. We have DVC now.
Yeah.
We're going to Aulani. And she goes, yeah, you don't have to twist my arm on that. So literally that started, you know, that conversation was January of 2022. And then we went on our trip to celebrate our 10-year anniversary, and which was November of 23. So it was a long, long time in the making.
And what was like your initial feeling? You get off the plane, you know you're going to celebrate this trip, you're finally hitting Aulani, everything's coming together. What's like hitting you in the gut?
It was probably walking into, walking into that lobby for the first time. I would put it in the same reference point of like a wilderness lodge or an animal kingdom lodge, but not as deep. The fact that like you walk through, you know, the main doors, and it's an open air lobby, and you can just look out and you can see the trees and you can see the ocean, and the spirit of the island just like washes over you. And that was such an awesome feeling. And the thing that I loved about the entire resort is that, you know, thank God Joe Rohde was the original Imagineer on this project, because I remember reading news articles from, you know, when Aulani was first being developed, that the locals weren't too thrilled that Disney was coming to Oahu. And I think that was part of the reason why they put Joe, you know, in charge of the project. And I will tell you, from every single little detail of this resort, this is a Hawaiian culture resort with splashes of Disney in it. And it is so tastefully done. I mean, sure. Is Mickey and Minnie walking around, you know, at the character breakfast? Yes. But at the same time, it doesn't smack you in the face like, you know, you go to one like an All-Star or a Pop Century, and, you know, there's like, a, you know, a 30-foot, you know, Woody doll, you know, out in front of the building or something like that. So it's so tastefully done, and it is so well representative and respectful of the Hawaiian culture and everything like that. Mm-hmm. It was just... So, you know, being surrounded by that, and, you know, every single moment it was such an awesome way to start.
I love that. And what was it in the planning process that you were like, we're going to go to Hawaii, we're going to go to Aulani, but what was the why behind Aulani? Was it like the vibes that you've heard of, or what was it that made you decide you wanted to actually go to the resort? And did it match that feeling that you felt when you got there?
It definitely matched, but I mean, really the reason why it was going to be Aulani was because of DVC. When you compare a rack room rate versus what, you know, when you do the math with your points and everything like that, what it would come out to per night, you're just saving so much money by going the DVC route.
Yeah.
That's what made it a slam dunk idea. I mean, sure, there's plenty of other resorts. I mean, you know, in the area of it's called Ko'olina. It's like essentially like the resort district of the island. You know, there's a Four Seasons right next door, and a little bit further down is a Marriott, I believe. So there's plenty of places that you can choose from. There's a great resort called Turtle Bay that's on the North Shore that a lot of people go to as well too. So I mean, in theory, you know, again, there's lots of places you go, you know, and there's a slew of hotels down Waikiki, but I knew that if I was going to do this, I wanted that true, authentic Hawaiian experience. And if anybody's going to be able to provide that in spades, it's going to be Disney.
So what were your favorite parts of the resort? Not necessarily the whole trip, but the resort itself.
Yeah. Again, going back to that fact about how it wasn't like overtly Disney.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite parts. You know, we decided in terms of the DVC points to splurge a little bit. And we decided to go with an ocean view room because we're like, nice. You know, you only have your 10-year anniversary once. So, yep. You know, we might as well do it right. So be able to walk out onto the balcony and just see the pool and the lazy river and the ocean was just, it was breathtaking. So I loved our room. Probably our favorite parts were probably the lazy river and the hot tub, because that's where we spend the majority of our time. Is even though we were there in November, and I mean the weather was in like the low 80s, I don't know if like my blood is changing or whatnot, but like anytime we got into a regular pool, it was just like way too cold for us. So it was like, okay, two laps on the lazy river and then a half an hour into the adults only hot tub, and then we just would, you know, go back and forth between those two.
I love it. And for folks like myself who haven't been there yet, what's the layout like? Like, where is the lazy river map to? the main building and all that stuff? What's like the layout of the resort look like?
So essentially, you have to think of the shape of the resort as a big U.
Okay.
And then, you know, so with the lobby being in the center, and then as it branches out is your two, they call them the towers, where all the rooms are. And then obviously in that big open space of the U, the first thing is the lazy river. Then it's the various pools and water slides. There's a grotto, infinity pool that I think back in the day used to be adults only, but I think since COVID they had made that for everybody. But then there is also beyond the pool, but just before the edge of the property, that's where they have a two-level adults-only hot tub that is infinity and looks out right onto the ocean and the beach and everything like that. And it's a perfect place to be.
All right, guys, everyone listening, we're all going to book a trip. We haven't even been chatting that long yet. And I'm already like, as soon as I get off this Zoom, I'm going back to look at more resale contracts. I need to add more points and I need to go.
You have to. You absolutely have to.
I knew this was going to happen, Greg.
I'm sorry.
All right. Talk to me about what else you did on the trip. Love the resort. Love the lazy river and the vibes. Did you get to do any fun excursions, any day trips? Because I know there's some really cool stuff that you can do both at Aulani and kind of in the area.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So my wife and I wanted the balance of, you know, like this was like really like our first big trip away since having our daughter. So we wanted to be able to balance just being able to unwind and recharge and explore, you know, sit and which is tough for me because, you know, my parents, again, hence why we didn't go to the beach and going to Disney World. You know, the idea of vacation is walking 10 miles a day. So at times that can be tough for me. So we want a good balance of, you know, we've made this investment to DVC, so we want to enjoy the resort, but you don't fly 12 plus hours to Hawaii just to stay at your resort. Right. So we decided to give ourselves like a jet lag recovery day. And then our first day was like fully at the resort, just hanging by the pool, you know, eating at the resort or nearby. And then I want to say it was our second or our third full day, we went to the Kaʻalua Ranch, which is about, I want to say, depending on which way it takes you, anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour away from the resort.
Oh, wow.
And my first tip for anybody that wants to go is you need to rent a car while you're there. Again, now, if you just want to stay on the resort, which is totally fine, then no, you do not need a car. But if you want to explore, apparently Ubers and Lyfts like aren't super reliable there. So that way you can just go on your own and everything like that. So we drove out there, and this is essentially this massive nature preserve that's part of the Jurassic Valley. Mm-hmm. But why it's so well known is that if there is ever a movie that is filmed in Oahu, it is filmed at Kaʻalua Ranch. You know, seasons of Lost were there. The movie 51st Dates, Jurassic World, some parts of the original Jurassic Park were filmed there. And what's really unique is that there are all sorts of tours. You can, you know, just do exclusively, you know, a movie set tour. And, you know, they'll drive you around and everything like that. Watching YouTube videos, like, it seemed cool. Like, especially if you have kids, I think it would be a good tour. At times, it seemed like a little hokey to me and everything like that. So we were trying to find, like, the right one. And they had this one called the Jungle Expedition Tour. And this was the tour that got you to the absolute highest point of the valley. So we were like driving this truck and we were going up some like massively steep hills. And then we got to like the highest point that like vehicles are allowed to go to. And then we went on like a 10 to 15 minute hike up to like the highest point where at least they allow visitors to go.
Wow.
And just being able to see the valley and all the hills and mountains and then look out into the ocean and everything like that was just absolutely breathtaking. That was really awesome. And then we followed that up by going to a restaurant called Haleiwa Joe's. There's two locations, but the one that we went to is like right down the street from Kaʻalua Ranch. And this is literally like a restaurant inside the Jurassic Valley. Like the views that you got out of here were absolutely phenomenal. In the lower level, they have these beautiful botanical gardens. So, you know, after we were done eating, like, we went around and explored there. And it was one of the best meals that we had all trip. And shockingly, because Hawaii can be expensive for practically everything, including food, it was one of our most affordable meals of the trip, too. You know, between, like, appetizers, salads, drinks, and our entrees, you know, we spent, like, less than $120 for the entire thing. And they're known for their prime rib. And KG, I'm not kidding. When this thing came out, it was probably about 3 inches thick. It weighed 2 to 3 pounds. And they were only charging $45 for the thing.
What?
It was insane. Yeah. That's of beef.
Wild. And I was like, I love prime ribs. So I'm just like thinking about that as a meal. That sounds incredible.
Yeah.
And then the vibes on top of that and the atmosphere. Exactly. And like knowing where you are.
Yeah. And the reason why we learned about this place is, you know, outside of like watching sports and everything like that, really the only thing that I'm watching in the evening times is, you know, vlogs on YouTube.
Yeah.
Stumbled across Ordinary Adventures. They're based out in, they're more Disneyland people, but they go all over. But they did this series at Aulani, and they went to this place, and they're like, if you want to be here and get the absolute best views, you got to rope drop the place, essentially. And so we got in line at like 3:45, doors opened at 4. We were the third people sat, and we were right along the fence with the gorgeous view and everything. That was spectacular.
Oh, love it.
I'm trying to think, what else did we do? We did go to the Dole Plantation, which is, again, a very family-friendly activity as well, too. Again, there's like a train ride that you can take through the pineapple fields and everything like that. In doing our research, like, we read like a common theme that, like, again, great for kids, but like not worth the price that you pay for it. But we still wanted to go, though, because, I mean, we all love Dole Whip at Disney World and Disneyland. But if I'm getting a Dole Whip, I want it like straight from the ground of Hawaii.
Yeah.
And I tell you, the Dole Whips that they have there are like 3 times the size of what we get at the parks. And on top of that, they put fresh pineapple on top of it.
Ooh.
It was so mind-blowing good that we had a bunch of time before our flight home that we actually drove back to the plantation just to get another Dole Whip.
Love it. The Disney crew and the Dole Whip will forever be linked.
Yeah, absolutely. And then really the last thing that we did off property was, so my anniversary is on one day and then my birthday is the next. So, you know, my wife was like, what do you want to do? I'm like, I just want to be able to like explore the island. So I found this touring company that will pick you up at your resort and they will drive you around for 8 hours and in a convertible Bronco, which was really, really cool.
Ooh.
And they essentially like, okay, what do you want to do? And my wife and I said to them, like, we just want to explore the beauty of the island, but like not be in like the super touristy areas.
Right.
And he heard that and immediately put his foot on the gas and we were off. And what was crazy is, you know, we thought about hiking Diamond Head because, you know, the first day that we got there, we thought, oh, we're going to sleep in because we're so jet lagged. We were up at 3:30 in the morning because of our, you know, internal body clock. So we're like, well, let's go hike Diamond Head. And we found out it was like sold out. So when he had said, oh, that we tried to do Diamond Head, we're like driving towards Honolulu and Waikiki. And then all of a sudden he like veers off into this residential neighborhood, starts driving up all these hills. And then all of a sudden we get to the top of the hill and it's this gorgeous lookout of Honolulu and Waikiki. But you got the same experience as if you did Diamond Head, but he like drove us to the top. It was things like that the entire day, you know, then like driving along the coast, pulling off into lookouts, you know, seeing views. I remember one of the last like beaches that we saw, again, veered off into a random neighborhood at this dead end. And then it was just filled with rocks and being able to just take it in. And he brought a video camera and a digital camera with him. So he's like taking photos of us and videos and everything like that. And then, you know, he's like, are you hungry? So then we would pull off to this like little shack on the side of the road that like gave you like an authentic plate of Hawaiian food. And then I think it was getting like closer to lunchtime. And the thing that, you know, Hawaii is really known for is their garlic butter shrimp.
Oh.
And there is this food truck called Giovanni's, which is like the creme de la creme. And the thing was, is that I was doing all this research about the shrimp. And everyone's like, it's turning into a tourist trap. And there's just like so many people there. And when I said that to our tour guide, he was like, I respect you for doing your research, because I was able to like draw like a Philadelphian comparison. You know, yeah. Everyone thinks cheesesteaks, so they got to go to South Philly and go to Passangino's. Well, everyone knows that they're some of the crappiest cheesesteaks, you know, in the city. You can find some really good ones, you know, three blocks, you know, away or something like that. So he drove us to this other place and we got like their last butter garlic shrimp of the day. And it was so mouthwatering and mind blowing that I still have dreams about it today. So that was awesome. And then we ended up driving up to the North Shore, see the massive waves that the surfers go on, everything like that. We didn't see any sea turtles because usually they're pretty big in that area. And then ended the day with an authentic Hawaiian shave ice. And it was a perfect way to end our trip for sure.
Oh, that sounds incredible. And we'll make sure to drop links in the show notes to all the places, because that sounds incredible.
Yeah.
And now, were those private tours or were you in like a group? How did that work?
The Kalua Ranch thing, that was a group tour. But I would say there was less than like 20 people. I mean, like, it's kind of like Disney, a sense where like they really know what they're doing. Yeah. And there's like, you know, tours going out every 15 minutes and it just works like clockwork. So, you know, even though there's other people with us, it felt intimate. But then the thing that we did on my birthday with the Bronco convertible, that was private, just my wife and I. And since we've gone on that tour, the price has gone up exponentially. So I'm glad I'm glad I booked it early. But
and that, you didn't even go that long ago. So that's crazy that it's already gone up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild. So because the thing is, a lot of the tour groups we found out, you know, they'll say like free pickups or everything like that. But a lot of the pickups are from the Waikiki area, because that's where all the resorts are. Where, again, Ko'olina is like 45 minutes away. So thankfully, when I booked, they weren't charging for pickup there. But now they like tack on like another like $75 or $100 to like come all the way out there to pick you up and everything like that.
Oh, yeah. That's a good jump.
Absolutely. Yep.
Now, was there anything about the resort, about Aulani specifically, that surprised you, good or bad?
So I'll start with the bad first. Is this, as a resale DVC member, This was the first time that I felt like a second-class citizen.
Really?
Yeah. So the story is, we're walking back to our room, and in like the little like DVC lounge area where, you know, they have their sales reps and everything like that, they had this really cute like Hawaiian wooden Mickey statue. Mm-hmm. So we're like, let's go over there, get a selfie, and we can send it back to our daughter. And all of a sudden, you know, so of course a rep immediately comes up to us and starts chatting with us and everything like that. You know, she's like, what's your last name? And, you know, we'll get you all looked up. And I'm like, you're like, okay, great. But before she had done that, she had given us this piece of paper of all these exclusive activities for DVC members that you can do at Aulani. And we're like, okay, this is great. And then she comes back and realizes that we're resale members. And she's like, oh, unfortunately, you won't be able to come to this or that or that or that. I'm not grandfathered in like the rule was a couple of years ago. So we were essentially uninvited to all of these like different like special events and everything like that.
Oh no.
Yeah. So that was like the running joke for like the rest of the trip is, what else can we get uninvited to?
Yeah.
So but really that was the only negative thing of the entire trip. The thing that really surprised us was the food.
Yeah.
We did all of the dining options there with the exception of makahiki, which is in the morning is their character breakfast. And in the evening is a dinner. It used to be their buffet before COVID. But unfortunately, once the resort reopened, they have not brought the buffet back. So it's like one of those like, kind of like how they're doing at California Grill now. It's like, you know, the prefix menus and stuff like that. And we had heard very hit or miss things about that restaurant. So we decided not to do it. But, you know, in terms of phenomenal food, we really enjoyed the Ulu Cafe, which is the quick service there. Mm-hmm. They had awesome flatbreads and poke bowls. And we always say we sound pretentious now when we say it, but the acai bowls were absolutely delicious. For our anniversary night, I did the research of like, when is sunset in Ko'olina on, you know, on such and such date. So we did Ama Ama, which is their signature restaurant on property. So we had that for our anniversary, and now that's prefix as well, but a lot more courses and everything like that. Plus we did, you know, we were like YOLO, It's our anniversary. Yeah. So we did the wine pairing that was attached to that as well. So that was phenomenal. But really in terms of just the overall like resort experience, and then in terms relation to food as well, is I was absolutely floored by the luau that they offer on property. They only do it a couple of nights a week. And actually, I think it was like two Christmases ago, my father had gotten my wife and I preferred seating tickets for the luau because him and my sister had done it a couple of years ago. And it's like, if you're going to do it, pay the little bit extra more and get the preferred seating. But that was a buffet style, you know, even though it was buffet food, it was really, really good. Between Lomi Lomi salad, the Kahlua pork, they had poke, full open bar, you know, desserts and just all sorts of wonderful food. It was incredible. But then to top it off by the luau itself, you know, Disney Entertainment did a really good job because, again, incorporating the true Hawaiian culture. And this is, you know, granted, it's a situation where I think the luau itself was probably about 90 minutes long.
Wow.
Within the first 15 minutes, sure, Mickey and Minnie come out on stage in their Hawaiian outfits and you learn the Alani Hula dance. But then once Mickey and Minnie go off stage, there is not one more reference to Disney the entire time. And it's just all about the island. Not sure. They talk about Maui. So sure, you can make a Moana connection there. But I mean, they're talking about like Hawaii's Maui, not the rock.
Yeah.
And so just and the storytellers and the musicians and the singers and the hula dancers were just awesome. And I remember just walking away from that and telling my wife that this was like top notch, one of my favorite things that we did the entire trip.
Yeah. So if you had to say one thing that people have to do if they're going to go to Aulani, would it be the luau?
Oh, absolutely. It would be the luau. 1,000%. Yeah.
Yeah. Something that I didn't put in the notes, but I am thinking about now, is everybody talks about the merch from Aulani. Did you guys get anything? Did you bring anything back? What were your thoughts on the merch there?
Yeah, so we got plenty of stuff. my wife almost bankrupted us, which was fun. Yeah, what's really cool about it is that, and I think maybe this is why I'm growing such a connection to Hawaii, is that not only do they have their own culture, but there is a massive Japanese influence. You know, like when we were at Kahlua Ranch, you know, the amount of Japanese tour groups that we saw there was really a sight to see. But Disney also knows that too. So like when you look at all the signage around the resort, it's in English and it's in Japanese. And because it's in Japanese, they are big on Duffy and Friends. So, you know, it'd be hysterical. I know we're talking about merch here, but like, for example, when they do like the character greetings, Mickey might have a 5-10 minute line, but we want to get a photo of Olu Mel, which is like Duffy's friend that is like exclusive to Aulani. We waited in line for about 40 minutes. It was insane. And the number of Japanese tourists that are there with their outfits and their dolls and the outfits for the dolls and everything like that was really, really interesting to see. But they did have, you know, a lot of exclusive merch. We came home with a blanket and then we got a bunch of Duffy stuff for my daughter. I came home with a really nice polo shirt. But the one thing that my wife kept waffling on the entire time is every single room comes with, you know how at the Polynesian, there's the shruggy guy and in each room there's the shruggy lamp?
Yep.
The same thing here, but it's a wooden Mickey holding a surfboard.
Oh.
And you can buy the lamp in the gift shop.
Oh, no.
I think it cost around like $300 or something like that. And then
you got to ship it home.
And you got to ship it home too. And that's all my wife talked about. And I'm like, we'll get it. And she's like, no, I've already bought too much. And if she has any regrets from our trip, it's that for sure. But the saving grace, though, is that one of the big things that we collect when we travel, no matter where we go, is Christmas ornaments.
Oh, yes.
And they actually have the Mickey lamp as a Christmas ornament.
Perfect.
The thing that we found out, though, is that it is one of the most sought after items in the gift shop. And we just happened to be walking by, you know, coming back from the pool or something like that. And we saw a cast member putting them out. And we literally pulled an audible and a bowed face, went to the gift shop and bought the thing right away.
That's crazy. Yeah, it seems like there's almost this like subculture for Aulani in addition to, like you said, all of the like traditional Disney stuff, traditional Hawaiian culture stuff. It seems like there's like this very niche little market in there. Mm-hmm. And because I know Jimmy and Kelly have gone a few times and they've brought me back two beautiful pairs of ears from mm-hmm. Aulani that I brought one of them on Disney cruise that I went on because they were like purple and they had the beautiful flowers on them. I was like, I would wear these everywhere. And they said that there wasn't a ton of people in like ears or anything like that mm-hmm. around yep. the resort. But like you said, there's kind of like touches of the merch and things like that there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, it's Hawaii and it's Disney.
Yeah.
So there's going to be some massive sticker shock. But if there's something that you like, you definitely need to get it for yourself. That's for sure.
I love it. All right. Last Aulani question before we talk okay. Rise and Run. And I think I know the answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Would you go back? Why or why not?
Oh, 1,000%. You know, when we were there, I actually sent a message because, you know, even though when I was in high school, when I was an exchange student in Japan, to this day, I am still in contact with my host family. And oh, I have this Japanese messaging app. It's almost kind of like their version of WhatsApp.
Yeah.
And I said to my host sister, I was like, you know what? I can't do it in, the next 2 years or something like that. But I would love for us to all meet together at this wonderful place.
Oh, because, that would be so nice.
For my family and I, it'd be about a 12-hour flight. For them, I think it's like a 7 or 8 hour flight. So it's not too terrible for them. So I would do that in a heartbeat. Although if my wife gets her way, she wants to do the ultimate Disney trip where we fly to California, do Disneyland for a couple of days, then fly to Tokyo, hang out with my host family for a while, and then also do Tokyo Disneyland and Tokyo Disney Sea, because everyone in my family is jealous of me that I've been to those two parks.
Yeah.
And I need to go back, especially with Fantasy Springs opening up in the next couple of months here. Then on the way back, stop in Aulani and then come home. So I'm like, well, when you're able to have like 45 days off and yeah. we hit the lottery, then we can do this trip for sure.
I love it. Well, we're going to have you come back and do a whole Tokyo Disney episode because
okay.
never been. And I have lots of questions about that.
I mean, Grant, it was 2002 when I was there. But I mean, I love watching vlogs, because now that the country is open to tourism again and everything like that.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that more people are going over there. And last night, I just watched Paige Mr. Morrow was over there and everything like that. So just being able to see everything that I remember, just it brings back so many nostalgic feelings. But then also knowing what's coming are things that I haven't experienced. But also,
yeah,
like the confusing things that I think about, and actually it was just in this video, there was a 2 hour wait for Soarin'. Now we've all done Soarin'.
Yeah.
And I mean, sure, we know what the ride is, and it's the exact same ride over there, but we can't even hold a candle to their queue. Like, it is like absolutely next level as opposed to ours, which, carpeting the walls. Yeah. Well, because it's not owned by Disney, it's just licensed.
Yeah.
The Oriental Land Company essentially goes to Walt Disney Imagineering and says, this is what we want. Here's a blank check. Do it for us.
Yeah.
I mean, not to go on a tangent here, but I mean, if you ever watch the Imagineering story, that documentary on Disney Plus, there's a point in the company's history where like Imagineering is like divided in half because half the team got to work on Disney Sea, which in my humble opinion is the best Disney park on this planet. And then the other half got to work on the sad state of affairs that was California Adventure 1.0. And it was things are getting budget cut and you have Drew Carey in a limo ride and everything like that. And, Eisner's slashing things left and right. And then here's Tokyo and they just can do whatever they want. It's amazing to see.
Oh, wild. One more question about Aulani.
Sure.
If you had to give one tip for somebody listening who's like, oh my gosh, it sounds amazing, I have to go, what's the one thing that you would say they have to do, they have to think about, they have to plan for going for their first time?
To be honest, even though it is a vacation that is not nearly as stressful as planning a Walt Disney World vacation, I think the research part of it is vital for you to have a really good time. I remember I joined a couple of like Facebook, you know, planning groups and everything like that, you know, watching as many vlogs that I could find on YouTube and everything like that, just so I could get like, even though you're like, you're watching the vlog, it's not ruining anything for you because right. nothing will be being able to be in person there. But having as much information in your back pocket to then make, you know, the right decision for you and your family in terms of, okay, do I want to do this experience or do I not want to do this experience?
Yeah.
So you really got to be laser focused on your planning. And then I would also say my other biggest tip would be when it comes to the food, again, you're in Hawaii, everything's going to be expensive. But if you're trying to save a few bucks, and if you do go, especially with a DVC accommodation, right across the street from the resort is a shopping center that has a bunch of different restaurants. When my wife and I went, we did two trips over to a restaurant called Monkey Pod, which is very, very good. Get a Mai Tai. You'll thank me later. One day we did breakfast at a place called Eggs and Things. You know, good breakfast food, you know, and again, cheaper than if you were at the resort. And then there's also a little market there that has all sorts of different, you know, a mini version of a grocery store. But they also have like a big deli as well, too, where you can get sandwiches and pizzas, create your own poke bowls. Again, it's a little pricey, but it's cheaper than it is at Alani. But if you have a car as well, too, there's a Costco there. And guess what? Oh. The same $1.50 hot dog deal that's here on the mainland is also in Hawaii as well, too.
I love it. So you get all your options.
Absolutely.
Amazing. Well, let's talk running and let's talk Rise and Run. Because okay. there's so many great things that we can talk about with Run Disney and with Rise and Run in general. If you think about your running journey, how did you get into running altogether? Have you always been a runner? Something new in like later in life?
Hell no. I was one of those kids where we're pretty similar in age. You remember in elementary and like middle school, it was the Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, physical fitness test and everything like that. That thing scared the crap out of me. And I remember it was like, how fast can you run a mile and all that jazz? So yeah, I hated it. But then it really boiled down to it was around 2011, 2012. I was engaged. And I was just trying to lose weight for my wedding. And I was like, let's try this running thing. And I did that. And I was doing like a couch to 5K.
Yep.
And then I can't remember how, but I stumbled onto, and a lot of people in the Run Disney community call him the Godfather, Gerald Resnick over at Res Runs. I somehow stumbled upon his videos. And that's how I learned of Run Disney. And then because it was Run Disney, then I learned about Jeff Galloway. And so then I was introduced to interval running and I thought that that was fantastic. And then I started doing it on my own and then I did a couple of Run Disney races. And then when I was getting serious about going from the half marathon distance up to the marathon, that's when I made the plunge into customized training as part of the Galloway program and met the absolutely heavenly Chris Twiggs. That man has single-handedly changed my life for the better in terms of running. And, you know, not only is the Run Disney community awesome, but the Galloway running community is equally as awesome. Great. And that's what's really, really awesome about it. So you just continue to learn information and, you know, it's helped me get more deeply in love with something that, you know, if you would have asked me back in middle school, I would have laughed in your face about.
Yeah. I love it. I just saw a reel the other day that was like, if you were the kid that hated running in school, how's your marathon training cycle?
Exactly.
Yep, and I was like, oh no, that's me. Damn it. Damn it. Now, how about Rise and Run? How did you get involved? I know we talked a little bit about it when we had the whole crew on or most of the crew on. How'd you get involved in the Rise and Run podcast? And talk to us about, I guess, the journey of the Rise and Run podcast. Like we talked about, you're at 131 episodes right now and absolutely incredible growth to see all the things that you all have been doing.
Yeah, I mean, kind of like the Disney company, it all started with a man, and that's Bob. Bob and I met. This is the craziest story in the world. I was running a quarter of a marathon, and I love the name of the race. It was like Phil's Tavern Quarter of a Marathon because a 10K is just not enough. because I think quarter marathon that comes out to like, you know, six and change or whatever, but it's more than 6.2.
I love it.
So my college roommate wanted me to run this race with him because it took place. I'm an alumni of Temple University, and we have a satellite campus in the suburbs of the city. So it's really cool to be around there. I'm like, sure, let's do it. And I happened to be wearing a running shirt because Run Disney used to do this. They used to sell merch that was, I'm training for blah, 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 blah. So I had this shirt on that said, I'm training for the 2016 Wine and Dine Half Marathon. I have to go to the bathroom, waiting in line in the locker room. And this rather tall gentleman just looks at me and goes, I'll see you there. And I was like, cool. And I'm thinking, I'm never going to see this man again in the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I'm a back of the packer. So my college roommate like just blew the doors off of me. And so I'm expecting him to be the one at the finish line. And he wasn't. He was off kibitzing with other people. The person who was waiting for me at the finish line was Bob.
Oh.
And at that point, he had met Alicia virtually online. And, you know, they had were part of this Facebook group that was started by who's now a friend as well, too, who's local to the Philadelphia area. I think it was like a Run Disney and Beyond was the Facebook group or whatever. So I got involved with that group. And then Alicia started the Run Disney motivational team and the whatever year that was first time, you know, marathon goofy dopey first timers group. You know, so I really established a relationship with a bunch of people there. But I mean, at the end of that race, though, I chatted with Bob for like a good half an hour after that, and, you know, invited me to the Facebook group. And, you know, and that's where I, you know, met all these wonderful friends and everything like that. And then, you know, really, I think the sense of community before Rise and Run started because of COVID.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have races, you know, we were just running on our own. And, you know, every other Thursday, we would all, as many as people as we could, got together on Zoom and just chatted about various things. And I remember Bob was, you know, at that point was training for something, and he's not much of a music guy when he runs. He rather listens to spoken word.
Yeah.
And he found a bunch of Disney podcasts, and he found a bunch of running podcasts. There weren't a lot of Run Disney podcasts. I mean, sure, back in the day you had Mickey Miles and More and the Let's Run Disney podcast, but really those aren't really functional anymore. So he thought that there was a niche market that'd be cornered, and he came up with this crazy idea. And then, you know, he talked to myself and Alicia and John and Lexi and Jack and Allie, and, you know, and we talked about it for a while, and then we finally had the courage to hit record. And now here we are 2 years and 131 episodes later, we're still going strong.
I love it. And it's so great to see too, because now at race weekends, you'll see people in Rise and Run shirts and hats, or it's on crazy. Their laptops or their water bottles. Like,
I would have never imagined it. Yeah.
Everywhere. And it's awesome. And like the meetups are great. Before the races, after the races, during the race weekend, like, you have really built some really awesome community with Rise and Run, which is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that is such a testament to this community that, you know, even though within the Run Disney community, there's subset communities out as well, too. Yeah. And I mean, sure, I love all the friendships that I have with my friends from high school and my friends from college. But I'll be perfectly honest with you, even though I only get to see these people maybe a handful of times a year, I feel like I'm in more in contact with my friends that I've made through the Run Disney community.
Yeah.
Than I do my fraternity brothers and stuff like that. I mean, you know, and I've just met so many wonderful people, like yourself, our wonderful friend Kristen over at Run Fit Mama, and yeah, Devin at Zippity Tees. And, you know, it just, there's so many inspiring people out there that, yeah, just want to see people succeed and just get better, not only in their physical health, but their mental health as well, too. And yeah, it's really, really wonderful. And we need more of that in the world today, for sure.
100%. And what would you say is your favorite part of those communities, both Run Disney and you're specifically in the Rise and Run community? What is it about them that makes them so special?
I just think it's the positive support. I mean, I've unfortunately, you know, Grant, I haven't witnessed it myself, but I have heard some stories that, you know, there's some Facebook groups out there that, you know, if you ask a question about, oh, what time does registration open? And then there's like 45 people that are ready to chop your head off because you don't know that it's 10 a.m. Eastern.
Yeah.
You might have just deterred that person from going on a health and fitness journey that could change their life. And that's really shameful. So I'm glad that thankfully the number of positive groups that are out there and positive individuals vastly, vastly outweigh, you know, the number of bad apples in the group, because again, we need more of this. And the more positive energy that we can see, not only online in the community, but at the races themselves, you know, the people that are willing, I've become very attached to, especially a couple of months ago when, you know, our friends in the AWD community, you know, needed a lot of support, you know, with what they were going through with all the changes, like the number of people that I've met that have been willing to give up their races or their personal goals to assist an AWD athlete. I mean, it's wonderful to see. And I'm glad that this idea of running and Disney combined together can bring out the best in people.
Absolutely. The other thing that I find to be so different about Run Disney, and I think Rise and Run is a big part of this too, is like you said, the support and the cheering that happens for one another. Whether it's, you know, a bunch of us have podcasts, we all support each other's podcasts.
Absolutely.
We go to each other's meetups. Like, you'll actually see people cheering if they're not racing that day. They're still up at 5 a.m. on the course, cheering for each other, waiting at the finish line, like being at like the parking lot party at the beginning of the race or after the race. Like, everybody is truly supporting each other. Or at least, to your point, all the people that I have met and become friends with, everybody truly gives a shit about one another. Mm-hmm. And like you said, wants to see each other succeed and wants to be there to support everybody.
Well, I think
that is so special to me.
One of my favorite moments from this past marathon weekend is I had a race weekend that I wasn't expecting. You know, I was going in just doing the 10K and the half, you know, which we all know turned into the half of the half. And, you know, I had all of these goals, you know, to like get the main street when it was dark and everything like that. And you know, it didn't happen. But even though I got negatively impacted because of the weather and everything like that, I still knew that in my heart of hearts, that even, you know, even though I was down the dumps a little bit, I had an obligation to myself and my friends and my community that I needed to be out on that course, you know, marathon day to cheer.
Yeah.
And thankfully I was at that point, I was staying at the Poly and I just walked over to TTC, which was wonderful. And I was literally there from the first elite until the balloon ladies passed and just cheering my face off. And again, seeing so many friends. And at one point I was standing next to, it was like two representatives from one of the charities. And essentially I think like their job was, okay, here's the bib numbers of the people who are, you know, running on behalf of us. They were following the tracking so that they'd be able to cheer for them, but they didn't know them personally. But again, I appreciated that they were there cheering, but I'm picking out people left and right, you know, and, you know, go Allie, go Bob, you know, go Jack, you know, and all of a sudden these two women turned to me. She's like, how many people do you know running this race? And I was like, that's the part of this great community is that I knew several dozen people running those races. And I was there to equally support each and every single one of them.
And as a runner yourself, you know how much and how impactful it can be when you're on the course and somebody is cheering for you, or when you're at the back of the pack like we are, when people are still on the course and they're still cheering for you. That is pretty incredible. Now, you've done a lot of fundraising for Give Kids the World for Run Disney. Talk to us about that. What's your experience been like? What are tips that you have for running with charities? And why do you keep doing it?
So the reason why I do it is that my parents have done a wonderful job of instilling the sense of community and giving back to those in need. It started with my parents well before my sister and I were even born. My mother was a school secretary, and she was of the mindset where if it was the dead of winter and a kid walked into school not wearing a coat, that next day that kid had a coat. Mm-hmm. And if she were alive today and knew of Give Kids the World, I would know for a fact that she would be obsessed with this organization. And what I love about it is that they raise money so that critically ill children and their families have the opportunity to come to the greater Orlando area on an expense-free vacation for 1 week where they don't need to worry about doctor's visits and medicines and how am I going to get to A and B? How do I get to experience, you know, Disney World and or Universal or SeaWorld or whatever? And then I think I learned, I'm not sure if the stat still holds true today, but I want to say 97 cents of every single dollar raised directly goes to benefit the children and the families.
Incredible.
And, you know, and I had learned about this, you know, again, through the Disney community as well. You know, there's lots of different, you know, whether it's YouTube channels or podcasts that, you know, and you like, especially like Diz Unplugged or the Be Our Guest mm-hmm. podcast, like they are massive with Give Kids the World as well too. You know, so when I learned about their mission statement, I knew for a fact that I wanted to be able to align with them in some way.
Yeah.
And then when I found out that they were a charity partner in terms of Run Disney, I was like, well, there's done a match made done. In heaven. So, you know, it all just started with, you know, fundraising with, you know, with family and friends. But then like I even extended it out to an idea of, so when my mom did pass, we started a fund in her honor to help children in the local community. You know, because again, you know, based on that story that I told you, you know, very similar things like that, where, you know, say the guidance counselor comes to my dad and says, hey, this family, you know, they can't pay their rent in the next 3 days. They're going to get evicted and they have three kids or four kids in the house or something like that.
Yeah.
So what my family does is, and we've had to change it over the last couple of years, but we would do a holiday craft sale, and all the crafts that were sold and the food would go into this fund for my mom. And my job was, I was the data entry guy at the checkout counter. So, you know, I would tick things off to make sure that the inventory was right. And the 1 year I finally got smart and I plopped down a bucket and I made a poster that I was raising money for Give Kids the World and the Goofy Challenge. And my dad said, yeah, he would match whatever was put in there and everything like that. And it was, you know, several hundred dollars over the course of, you know, that day and everything like that. So, you know, it just, I've been very blessed. I think I've now run 4 or 5 races on behalf of the village. And what's cool is that the new system that they use for like their online donations actually will tally up everything that you have done over the course of several years. And right now I'm fundraising for the 2-course challenge for Wine and Dine. And I am north now of $6,000 over Amazing. The course of the last couple of years. And which I found out that approximately it costs anywhere from $5,000 to $5,500 to send a family for a week long trip. So the fact that the work that I have put in, thanks to the generous supporters within my friends and family, have been able to send at least one family on a trip has really warmed my heart. And I'm so excited to be able to start the venture of, you know, sending that second family.
I love it. And we'll make sure to add your fundraising link into the show notes too. So if they want perfect. To donate to Greg, you can do that right at the link in the show notes.
I appreciate that. You know, it's tough. And Greg, I've taken a lot of advice from you, you know, and your awesome Instagram, you know, graphics that you create in your stories and everything like that. I appreciate the fact that you have inspired me to do those. But the one that I'm doing right now is, on last week's episode, I announced that I was going to do a attraction challenge. While I'm down for a springtime surprise. So I still have it open for a couple of days, but I was talking about some of my favorite attractions, but then we had like a listener question, but like, what do you hate at Disney World? And I said that I hate the magic carpets of Aladdin.
Oh no.
Because I just think that it's a monstrosity that creates a pinch point in Adventureland that should not be there. So then when I decided to fundraise for Wine and Dine, I had this idea of, you know what? If someone's willing to give me $30, I will ride those magic carpets. Oh. And you know, so as of right now, I'm up to, I think, 4 rides on the magic carpets. And then I did like a lower price point too, of like, you know, $10 or $15. And I'm like, I'll ride the People Mover, because I was trying to think of attractions that, you know, I could easily repeat and everything like that. So I was like, so I think as of now, I'm up to 7 rides on the People Mover and 4 on the magic carpets.
So everyone go donate so Greg can continue to ride the magic carpets. That's going to be so fun to follow along to. It's a surprise. I love it. Last question for running, and then we'll do our speed round of favorites.
All right.
is you are such a positive, motivating, inspiring human. And I love following you on Instagram, listening to the podcast. How do you personally stay motivated with your training cycles and all these races and work and your family and the podcast? How do you keep it all up and stay motivated and positive throughout all of it? That's a lot.
It is a lot. I think it comes back to like very overarching concepts of the fact that by doing the physical running itself, it will keep me motivated to stay healthy in the way that I want to stay healthy. You know, I'll fully admit I'm a big guy. I definitely align myself with one of our podcast guests, Martinez Evans. He's the handle 300 pounds and running. I always like to say that he's like a brother from another mother because, you know, we have very similar body types and we don't look like runners. But I know the fact that I'm out there moving that in some way, sure, I might not be shedding the pounds that I want to, but the fact that there will be some health benefit is what keeps me going there. But then, you know, whether it's doing the running or doing the podcast, recording it and editing it and, you know, trying to promote it and everything like that, you know, again, going back to what we talked about before is that as long as the work that I do is going to positively impact only one person, then that's all I need. But the fact that I know it's more than one person, you know, and it's wonderful that, you know, you read kind and wonderful messages and, you know, and it warms your heart and you become friends with these people and you be supportive of them. But at the same time, though, upon thinking about that, I feel like you could also get complacent with it. And and I think why I keep going with it is that, okay, maybe not this week, but maybe next month or next year, the person that's going to need to hear the message that we put out on the podcast, you know, that person just hasn't heard it yet. And I want to be able to reach that person. And in order to do that, I need to keep putting in that work. And that's why I'll continue to do it.
Amazing. 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 All right. You ready for speed round of favorites?
All right. Let's do it.
Okay. What is your favorite time of year to go to Disney?
I mean, now I would say marathon weekend, but before Run Disney, it would have been my family. We used to go the week after Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Because it was nice, because the weather was still warm, Christmas decorations were up, and you didn't have the holiday crowds.
Love it. How about your favorite resort? It can be any resort, anywhere in Disney property.
Oh, Polynesian. I mean, that's why we bought our DVC in there, because it was the canceled marathon weekend of 2021. I had rented DVC points, which was a financial commitment that I could not get out of. Yeah. And as I'm packing my bags, my wife is bawling hysterically. Oh. And it was in that moment that I knew that when I became a DVC member, it was going to be the Polynesian. So
I love it. How about your favorite restaurant on property?
Ooh. Oh, man. I want to say Ohana, but Ohana lately has been hit or miss. I'm going to go with a sleeper hit here. Sebastian's Bistro.
Ooh.
Over at Caribbean Beach. The food is awesome. It's plentiful because they changed it to the All You Care to Enjoy. It's very flavorful stuff, and it has a very similar dessert to that of Ohana, and it's like half the price.
We love it. How about your favorite Disney park?
Ooh.
And it can be anywhere.
Anywhere. Sorry, I thought we were strictly Florida. Okay. If it was Florida, anywhere. it was gonna be Animal Kingdom, but no, Tokyo Disney Sea. I mean, that thing is, you want to talk about a masterclass in themed entertainment that not even close. But
your face just like lit up too.
Disney Sea by a landslide. And I haven't been there in 20 plus years.
I love it. All right, how about your favorite ride, either at each park or if you have one ride that dominates all the parks?
Okay, so Hollywood Studios, probably my favorite now is Slinky Dog. Mm. Because that was, if there is a ride that will define my daughter and I, it's that one. The sheer joy and adrenaline that runs through her body and just being able to sit next to her and witness that and be able to see Disney through the eyes of my child. That's the ride that defines us. Magic Kingdom, for me, it's the Jungle Cruise. I love a good dad joke. I when I was at Temple, I used to be a tour guide, and I kind of embodied like the Jungle Cruise skipper mentality into the tours that I gave. So when I would introduce myself, again, I'm a big guy, I would introduce myself as an interpretive dance major with a minor in horticulture.
And
I would just, I would love to see the blank stares on these students and, like, and parents' faces. And it'd be like, oh no, I'm a communications major. Yeah. let's see. In Epcot, I would go Spaceship Earth. You got to love an oldie and goodie and thank the Phoenicians. And then Animal Kingdom for me is Triceratops. No, I'm kidding. It's the safari. I mean, again, where else in a theme park can you do something like that? But a close runner up though, and this is a hot take of mine. And again, this goes back to my daughter, the Finding Nemo musical. I know everyone swears up and down that Lion King is the best piece of entertainment in all of Walt Disney World, but it is the Big Blue World, people. I mean, the staging, I mean, the people who wrote the music for Frozen, the Lopezes, wrote the music for this show. You know, so if you like Frozen, you should be loving this musical.
Yeah. I don't know if you know Courtney from the Living Magically podcast, but she, I know, is going to be fist pumping and so excited to hear that answer because she loves that show and is always it doesn't get enough love. I love it. All right. How about your favorite Disney snack?
Does a Ronto wrap count or is that a meal?
Ooh, that's like, is a hot dog a sandwich?
Exactly.
Could go either way. So whichever one you want.
Yeah, we'll go Ronto wrap.
All right. How about your favorite merch or collectible item?
Here's the thing is that when it comes to merch, for me, it's very hit or miss. Like when I go to an expo, I buy all sorts of stuff. But then like when I'm walking around the parks, like I'm struggling to find something. So for me, I guess it would be the like whatever like the generic race weekend shirt is at the expo. That's like probably my go-to.
Love it. How about your favorite non-park activity?
Ooh, that's a great one. I did this last springtime surprise. I made the time commitment to go to Trader Sam's.
Ooh.
And just being, it's a very small space, but the bartenders are awesome. The drinks are delicious. You get to buy the cup if you want to. It's a hoot and holler good time. I mean, to me, it's if the Jungle Cruise and the Tiki Room and a bar had a baby. That to me is what Trader Sam's is, and I absolutely love it.
Amazing. How about your all-time favorite Disney movie?
Just because I've been on a kick on lately, I'm going to Goofy movie. I mean,
oh, so good.
Powerline slaps.
Every time.
I mean, Grant, I understand I'm a kid of the 80s and 90s, but yeah, there's nothing better than a Goofy movie.
Agreed. Now, this last one, right now we're in the thick of Mouse Madness, and this is a very hot topic right now for the Living the KG Life podcast listeners. Who is your favorite Disney character?
There, I'd probably say Pluto. I've always gravitated towards Pluto as a kid, and he's probably like the one character that if I do see him on the course, about 9 chances out of 10, I will be stopping for.
I love it. How do you feel that Pluto got booted by Mickey himself?
I mean,
his own damn owner.
Yeah. I mean, that being said, though, like, I'm a huge college basketball nut, so I understand what it is to be a number one seed. And when, and when you're the main mouse, there's, I think if maybe everything was scrambled up, like you put, you know, Pluto in a different division on the other side of the bracket where they could meet, you know, potentially in a national championship game.
Yeah.
But again, I understand and I respect what you and Jimmy did. And I'm not heartbroken, but I understand it, though.
Yeah. All right, very last question, and then I'll let you go. What is your favorite magic moment at Disney? Could be any park, run Disney or not, any experience.
This goes back to a trip. I want to say it was in, I can't remember if it was before or after I was married. My wife used to work for a children's home where it was 40 children of all sorts of ages with varying either physical or intellectual disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And like to the extent where it'd be hard for the average American family to be able to take care of them, and they need around the clock care.
Yep.
And every 5 years, what they would do is they would select 5 to 6 kids and they would go on a week-long trip down to Disney.
Wow.
And when my wife first started there, there was this one little girl. Her name is Sunny. She arrived at the home within like a couple of weeks of my wife starting. And the two of them have just this incredible bond. And she's now, my wife is her godmother, and I'm unofficially her godfather. That's why I have some beef right now with the church. But anyway. But so she was selected to go this one year. So we decided, myself, my wife, my sister, and my father, we decided to go down so we could be there to be able to experience Disney with her for the first time. And so, like, to me, that whole trip is the magical moment. But like some like the truly specific things was, you know, so she is, I mean, she's stuck in a wheelchair. So, you know, like when we went on Winnie the Pooh, like we had to wait until the specialty honeypot where you can push the wheelchair on, you know, shows up and everything like that. And even though she's mostly deaf and mostly blind, that kid came off of that ride giggling like I have never heard her before. And the cast member notices this and is like, "You guys want to go again?" And we're like, "Sure, let's do it." And then finish that turn, and she's acting the exact same way again. They're like, "Send them again." So we rode Pooh 4 times in a row.
Oh,
and
I love
and
it.
That was incredible. And then it all got capped off a couple of days later. We were invited to be part of an Illuminations dessert party.
Ooh.
And so we got that little alcove, like just past the fish and chip shop.
Yep.
There was like a whole buffet set out. It was like unlimited desserts and Mickey bars and stuff like that. And just this unobstructed view of the greatest fireworks show Epcot has ever produced, and that Illuminations, and they should bring it back. But I have this photo of my sister sitting next to Sunny, and, you know, it's super dark, but then there's the fireworks going on in the background, and it's one of my favorite photos ever. And it's a trip I'll never forget. And just seeing the kindness and the generosity of other guests, but other, you know, but cast members as well too. I mean, there was at one point, we weren't there to witness it itself, but what one of my wife's coworkers had told us, the story that they were at Chef Mickey's for a character breakfast, and this little girl saw Sunny, and I guess it must have been like their last day or something like that. And she had one of the Mickey balloons, and she went up to her and asked her if she wanted it. And I knew that if my wife and I were there, we would have been puddles on the floor.
Yeah.
So
incredible. Well, Greg, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast and chatting. I mean, I feel like I could just talk to you for days. So you are welcome back anytime. Whatever you want to talk about, let's chat.
Yes.
But in the meantime, where can folks find you on the internet? Where can they find Rise and Run podcast? Where can they follow along with all the Greg adventures?
Of course. Yeah. So on Facebook, it's the Rise and Run podcast. Our website, riseandrunpodcast.com. And on Instagram, we are at Rise and Run Pod.
Amazing. All right, Greg. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much, KG.
Thanks for hanging out today, everyone. I hope you had as much fun as I did hanging out with and chatting with Greg from the Rise and Run podcast. Make sure you check out the links in the show notes for both recommendations from Greg for Hawaii and the Aulani area, as well as his fundraising link for the Wine and Dine 2-Course Challenge. And as always, make sure you're following us on Instagram at Living the KG Life, and that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on your favorite podcast streaming platforms. We have new episodes out every week, so stick around. It's going to be great.